Welcome to this week's VFX Show. I'm Mike Seymour, episode 179, for those of you keeping count. And this is like a bit like our Christmas episode, really. This is the episode once a year where we kind of look at not just one film, but the films that are up in Oscar nominations award season. And coming up to this weekend, we're going to be discussing a kind of an overview, a compare and contrast, if you like, in terms of visual effects of the main films in running for the achievement in visual effects at the 86th Academy Awards. Helping me on my journey is New York's finest, Jason Diamond. How are you?
Oh, that is a very forgiving term, but thank you. I'm good.
Sounds like you're a cop.
Yeah.
And that was the voice of Mark Christensen. How are you, Mark?
Great, Mike. Thank you for having me back.
On the other side of the
getting the band back together.
It is. Yeah. You're always welcome. You've been incredibly busy doing a whole bunch of stuff, and hopefully we can find out a bit more about that. But one of the things that I know you've been doing is working on that Cinefex digital collection, which is finally arrived.
Yeah, it's a thing now. That's right.
It's a thing.
It was a thing we didn't even want to talk about because it was just a potential thing for such a long time.
Now it's a real thing. So we'll talk about that more a bit. But let's swing around onto the shows, and we're going to discuss mainly the what you'd think of when we say the Oscars, which is, of course, as I say, the achievement in visual effects for Best Feature Film. Though we're probably going to touch also on some of the VES awards, which happened last week or the week before, and also the SciTech Oscars, because the SciTech Oscars are really interesting, and of course it's the science half of the Academy of Arts and Sciences, looking at achievements, though less focused on what happened this year so much as it is this year rewarding those contributions that are acknowledged to have been significant, even if they sort of came, as in some cases, from many years earlier. So the films in contention for the actual award coming up this weekend is Gravity, who is without a doubt the favourite, Iron Man 3, The Hobbit, Desolation of Smog, Lone Ranger, and Star Trek Into Darkness. So just starting there and at the sort of blunt end of the discussion, really, to get it out of the way, Mark, think Gravity's going to romp it home?
Yes.
Jason?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. If and I don't think there is such a thing as a second place, of course, but if Gravity wasn't in the running, which of the other films would you like?
Isn't that an interesting question? I was thinking about this, and any one of these films could have given, I think even Hugo 2 years ago, a run for its money, honestly. And we can talk more about that. But, you know, according to the Predictinator, which I did visit and heard your interview with Todd, it would be The Hobbit, right? Like, statistically?
Yeah, The Hobbit would be the next one that the Predictinator. Do you want to explain what you're talking about for those that don't
sure.
know about the Predictinator?
Yeah, in fact, I think you've had Todd on this show the last couple of years. Yeah. So Todd Vaziri at ILM has put together his Predictinator, which, for those of you who don't know about it, really should look it up because it's a lot of fun.
Though, just to be clear, it has nothing to do with ILM. He does that, yeah. He often makes that point. It's very separate from ILM. Sorry, go on.
Right, absolutely. But he's going to be tapped at some point to call the odds on other things because his odds calling on VFX Oscar winners has been so consistently right on the money for, I don't know, what is it now, a decade and a half more?
Well,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, he went back and retrospectively did ones before the Predictinator was working, so as to see whether or not the model would work and also to learn anything he could. So if you look up the Predictinator, it accurately predicted the winners for many years, though he didn't do it for all of those years. That makes sense. He went back and said, okay, I wonder how the model would work if I applied it to previous years.
Yeah. So it's interesting that The Hobbit would have been the runner-up in that it is the polar opposite of Gravity in terms of, in just about every way you could think of. And so I think we should touch on that a bit more, but I think for me, I might have given it to Star Trek if it hadn't been.
Okay. Bold choice. What about you, Jason?
I think I would be on the fence between Star Trek and Iron Man 3.
I would have gone The Hobbit. That's probably no surprise to listeners of the show.
I was just saying, based on Mark's, without The Hobbit, other than The Hobbit, I would have
said.
But I think The Hobbit, would have gone.
I might have handicapped The Hobbit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say The Hobbit simply because I thought the character animation of Smaug was just so so well done. I think the thing about Lone Ranger is that it's... Okay, so this is a point we make each year we do this. It's very hard discussing these films in terms of merit versus what you think the Academy would do. And they are two separate things. For example, I might say that The Lone Ranger has one of the best train wrecks kind of ever, blah, blah, blah. But it might be that I also would say that the Academy would never vote for it because the film wasn't very popular. So that's the sort of the duality of what's going on here. You know, sometimes films, for example, the Matrix sequels went very badly at the Academy. And the only reason that could possibly be given is that they weren't being judged solely on visual effects. Because to not even get the Matrix sequels up into contention for the Oscars still to this day is just stunning to me. Yet I understand people didn't like the sequels in some respects, but that's sort of immaterial to the quality and the spectacular contribution that the team's made on those films, just to use an example. So we're going to bounce around that today because you just can't get away from it, right? I mean, I think that Gravity is worthy in terms of its technical achievement, worthy in terms of its contribution to the state of the art, and also is likely to be greatly appreciated by the Academy voters who aren't, at this level, the same as the industry Academy voters that got the films to this shortlist position. To get to the shortlist position, you had to go well at the Bake Off, which is really being voted by peers, people like you guys listening to this, who are able to vote. But once it goes into contention for the Oscar, it's open to a predominantly white, predominantly old, predominantly actor-driven demographic that is the broader Academy. So I guess the Lone Ranger is the one that in this list probably caused the most surprise. And certainly I had people saying to me that they thought that if they'd been asked beforehand to sort of pitch between Lone Ranger and Man of Steel, that they would have put Man of Steel in the list. What do you guys think?
Well, and then the one that was in the VES top five to replace it was Pacific Rim, which also was a flop, but was a VFX tour de force. So it is kind of...
Was it a flop? I mean, it didn't go as well as it could domestically, but didn't it go pretty well internationally?
I think box office versus cost was almost identical to Lone Ranger.
So, okay, good to know.
Yeah, it was pretty much, I mean, at least here it was considered a flop. But, you know, a year in which that movie wouldn't even make it into the top five is a pretty awesome year.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the quality of the visual effects work, and I've got to say the massive contribution that visual effects made to box office is undeniable this year. I think, notwithstanding that, I do think Tim Alexander is a really good VFX soup, and the Lone Ranger team did a good job. I don't mean to say they didn't. But yeah, I mean, it was just such a tough year. And I certainly felt like that was the odder one of the list. I think if there was another one that was maybe a little surprising, it's Star Trek, simply because Star Trek traditionally doesn't go very well with the Academy. It seemed to be a sequel of a sequel of a sequel. And by the time you get to kind of the Oscars, they like originality. That being said, I thought that the stuff that Roger did and the other guys, Ben Grossman and stuff on Trek, was awesome. I particularly liked it because I like Trek, right? I just like the whole genre. But yeah, there was some spectacularly good stuff from the ship coming out of the water at the very beginning through to the new jump into warp, which I thought was really, you know, it's great to know somebody can come up with an original take on something we've seen before. So what about Iron Man 3? Yeah, go on.
By the way, quickly, Pacific Rim's production budget was $190 million. Domestically, it made $101 million. And foreign, it made $309 million.
Right.
So worldwide, $411 million. And usually they say double the budget for marketing and whatever. So that's a break even. We're, you know, at $400 million.
Though okay, it does underline that point I was making, which went a lot better overseas than it did domestically.
Yeah,
because
three times better.
Yeah. I mean, it's not strictly true. It used to be 50-50. Now it's a little closer to 45-55, 40-60. But certainly American box office is close to, if not actually half normally on a big film. Iron Man 3 was interesting as well because, again, it really is clearly by the name the third in that franchise. And you could argue that even more so given the Avengers in the middle there. I thought Iron Man 3 was really good. It's I guess it comes down to at some point, do you want to give originality kind of more of a play? Not just in terms of what the Predictinator would say, but just in terms of, like, do we feel that a film that has original or is sort of expanding the sort of, I don't know, skill set that we have in the toolbox, is that something that should be really acknowledged? And it's only, I feel in talking to artists that they like it when films win the SciTech Oscar that have done stuff for the first time. Is that how you feel, Mark?
The SciTech Oscar or the VFX Oscar?
I'm sorry, the VFX. The actual Oscar. Sorry.
I feel two ways about it. I think this being the Academy, it's kind of like the best actor or best actress category that you could win while being in a film that wasn't all that great, but it's pretty rare and it kind of goes against the grain. And the way it usually goes is the opposite, where everything just kind of came together to support that performance. And that is the case with Gravity.
I was going to say that is almost, yeah, you couldn't have described
it
Gravity better.
It is a perfect example of that, really, where innovation comes together with what the story needed.
Yeah. On Life of Pi, Jason, there was quite a lot of controversy because on Life of Pi, the DOP didn't sort of really mention the VFX team, and virtual cinematography was, you know, seen to be pretty important in Life of Pi. And I've got to say, in Gravity, the line between the cinematographer and Tim Weber's team with the virtual cinematography seems super faint because the choreography of those very, very long shots is very strong camera work. It's very strong cinematography, but, you know, there wasn't anything there to direct that. It wasn't certainly done live action. Do you have any feeling about the recognition or otherwise that the Academy might place on the cinematography in Gravity?
Yeah, well, you know, similarly to your comment about Life of Pi, Alfonso Cuarón, the director of Gravity, gave no nods at all when he won the Golden Globe to the VFX team in any way, as far as I remember, which is, I think, you know, it's a little criminal in a sense, because they're the ones making your movie. Now you're the director, it's your vision, but they're the crew, but in a much larger sense than a typical crew. And I'm not saying that to disparage any crew on either side, but I feel like making an extremely visual effects heavy movie, it's just the same skill sets are skill sets. But anyway,
because, you know, Alfonso was actually sort of given a special award at the SciTech Oscars, and not only that, but his leading lady from the film made a surprise. Sandra Bullock basically turned up to give the award, right? And I didn't expect her to be there. Certainly wasn't announced. So, you know, you've got the director there being acknowledged by I'm saying the SciTech Awards. I'm completely confusing that with the VES, aren't I? Yeah, sorry. The VES, and also Sandra Bullock turning up at the VES Awards for that presentation. And there was a lot of love in the room that night. Maybe you could argue that, you know, he'd have to because he's in that room. But in an award show that was otherwise pretty horrendous for a lot of other reasons and a lot of other screw-ups, I've got to say the Gravity presentation was really good and Sandra Bullock was really good and acknowledged, you know, the contribution of the artist, as did the director, very strongly.
I have no doubts that he appreciates the contributions of the team and respects them in every way possible. I just think, outside of your mother and your wife, they should be top of mind, you know, for any other non-VFX community-based award you would win.
Yeah.
Would seem that way. You know, in this, I know not a lot of the articles I read about Gravity, they said that the visual effects team worked really closely with Chivo, the DP, to give him tools to be able to have a more hands-on connection to the visual effects or the previs or whatever they were doing. So I don't know if that is – I don't believe that's commonplace.
Yeah,
in,
I mean,
in those types of films.
From doing a fair amount of research on the film, it does seem to me like the there was basically, you know, whereas normally there'd be the director and the DOP, there was the director, the DOP, and the visual effects supervisor at the early stages working out so much of this that Tim Weber was considered in many respects on par with the DOP in the actual sort of formulation of shots. And it wasn't a vendor-y kind of relationship. And it isn't, so in one sense it isn't Framestore that did the previews, though in another it is, because Framestore did a deal with Third Floor to set up a previews unit in London. So, and something, if you look it up, it, you know, the previews is by Third Floor, but it's Third Floor London, which is in fact Framestore and Third Floor combined. And that previews is what's determining what they're doing on set, because for a lot of those shots, you know, it's what you commit to in the previews when you're having that giant crane kind of flying down, Bot and Dolly running at the cube, defining, you know, the move based on how the lighting in that cube is acting with the actress. There's not a lot of room for move, right? You've committed.
Yeah, you're kind of locked in.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a feeling that that gravity also helps in the fact that, you know, it is it's like not fantasy. Like, I don't think that that those films are as rewarded. That being said, I guess Lord of the Rings went really well when it was going through its run of through the Academy and the Oscars. So, you know, the Academy did reward it. But I've always felt that the Academy prefers something that's more visual effects seem to be based in reality than visual effects based in pure fantasy. I know. Mark, is that your impression?
I suppose so. I think it's interesting that by that standard, Lone Ranger is actually in a really good position, and of these films was, you know, ironically, was a supporting VFX film for VES because we don't regard it necessarily as a show in which the VFX opened the picture, and yet it's an absolute tour de force of visual effects. It had just about every type of visual effect that, you know, you can create in it. And whereas Gravity has a much more constrained set of things that it did absolutely to the max and reinvented.
Well, now, I wouldn't say the criticism, but the observation made by people at the Bake Off was that the Lone Ranger team very heavily pushed the role of practical effects and the idea of sort of doing things in camera and then enhancing them digitally. And if you were to watch that pitch that they made, apparently, because I wasn't in the room, but, you know, I know people that were, it almost sounded like they were sort of...
Oh, they were trying to be in that category?
So yeah, they were very much trying to say, hey, we're special effects, not visual effects, because if you want to vote for something that's not all these computers, vote for us kind of thing. That would, you know, not be unprecedented the Academy's preferred special effects over visual.
Yeah, awards shows are great because they bring us together to talk about these things and look back at the year and, you know, do everything we're doing right now. But we also know that they're not a pure exercise in always electing the best in the cleanest way. And on that note, I'm going to say that, you know, to me, it looks like Gravity's probably going to win the cinematography Oscar. I don't know what you guys think, but...
Yeah, well, the nominees are The Grandmaster, Gravity, Inside Llewyn Davis, Nebraska, and Prisoners.
Right.
And in that is, you know, Feeding Papa Michael, Deakins, and Chivo.
Can't Deakins, you know, win, please?
I mean, Prisoners was a good movie, but it would be, you know, out of all the movies he's made, you wouldn't really pick that one as the one.
Well, yeah, but they could just give it to him for not give it to him for Skyfall. I mean, surely they just, hey, well, sorry.
That absolutely does happen in every category. You get you get an award for the one you did one or two ago.
But Mark, you can't touch on this fact that Lone Ranger wasn't even in the category of sort of in the VES Awards that these other films were. In other words, in the VES Awards, they split out the film that's up for the best visual effects film where it's a visual effects fest versus supporting role of visual effects in a feature film where it's assumed that the story is maybe a bit more like Wolf of Wall Street, but you've got some visual effects in there and it's not a, you know, Pac Rim, but hey, they should be acknowledged as well. And so Lone Ranger actually took the prize home that night for best supporting visual effects in a feature film. which makes it even more surprising, I guess, that it's in in the same contention with the Oscars, because they have to pick that themselves. I mean, it's that team, not anyone else, that decides what category they went into. So either they were acknowledging that that's what they thought, or they thought, hey, this is a really clever play, let's stick it in there. Now, somebody told me, in fact, I think it was actually somebody who was involved in winning, that the same thing happened with Hugo. I haven't had a chance to look that up, but I think Hugo, if it didn't, they certainly considered putting Hugo in for best supporting visual effects in a motion picture as opposed to the main category in the VES Awards for exactly the same reason that you sort of, you know, it's a medium-sized fish in a small pond or a medium-sized fish in a killer pond, and you know which way you're going to go.
Well, and what's the determining criteria between the two?
It's really meant to come down to whether or not you'd think of it as a big effects film. And as I say, it is decided by those submitting. So The Hobbit is a big effects film. There's just no question. Pac Rim, big effects film. But once you start getting to Lone Ranger, you could argue, well, it's not all set in space. It's not all set in Middle Earth.
And
Johnny Depp.
You go like Wolf of Wall Street and say like, okay, all the visual effects in that were, I mean, I didn't see it, but from what I understand, a majority of the visual effects are, you know, set extensions and more supporting type.
Yeah, I mean, there is a huge ship wreck at sea, and you know, you obviously don't think that was done that way. But apart from that, yes, most of the visual effects are of the type that you wouldn't even notice that they happened.
Right. Whereas Lone Ranger has
vast trains,
basically
crashing
the same train. Yeah. They have the same train wreck as the beginning of Toy Story 3.
yeah, notwithstanding a giant pylon to just miss your crotch. Yeah, okay, I can see that.
So, Mike, you're absolutely correct. Hugo won for supporting visual effects the year that Rise of the Planet of the Apes won visual effects from VES.
Huh. One thing that people used to say is that the Oscars were dominated by ex-ILM alumni, and that this isn't something that ILM did wrong. It's just the bottom line is that ILM for many years were winning the visual effects category because there was less visual effects and ILM were at the top of their game and in an industry where there just weren't that many effects companies. As a consequence, there are a lot of ex-ILMers that were voting, and so ILM sort of had a lock on stuff from that point of view. But that doesn't seem to be the case now. And I guess I'm going to use this as an opportunity to discuss the kind of international nature of these five films. Now, There's been a bit of controversy over Gravity being a UK film, as the UK BAFTAs deemed it to be, given that it had American actors in it on a kind of American space setup, shot not by a London director, but nevertheless, it's an English film from a visual effects point of view because of Framestore. Iron Man 3 had stuff obviously coming out of America, but it also had a heavy presence out of New Zealand, especially in that third act. Hobbit, obviously, very much New Zealand. Lone Ranger is ILM. You could say that's classic Californian stuff, though ILM itself now is split over what? London, they've just announced. San Francisco, of course, up in Canada and over in Singapore. And then Into Darkness has an international rundown because in addition to the ILM team, there was stuff happening there from Pixamondo, which is very much an international company. Do we think that it's an international award, this, or an American award?
I think it's an American award. I think most of the voters are Americans. And again, if it's an international award, I don't understand how Pacific Rim is not in this group based on what we said and the international appeal of it.
I mean, the BAFTAs are very much an English award, right? I mean, there's just no doubt about it. But in the BAFTAs, you've still got special effects in the nomination group was still The Hobbit and Iron Man 3 and Pac Rim. And in fact, it's exactly the same group with Pac Rim replacing Lone Ranger. And guess who won?
It just doesn't get any more Hollywood than George Clooney and Sandra Bullock, really.
Right. Even though this is, as I say, classified as a English film.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, so that kind of puts the lie, I'd say, to that.
It is a very English visual effects crew, though, Mark.
Yeah, no, and they created a lovely cottage industry there with the studio and the stage setup and everything. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
No, I mean, it's not distracting. I mean, really what we're saying is this argument may be coming, you know, it could become less and less relevant year over year, really. But if we're talking about the Academy Awards, it's still definitely got an American bias. So I don't think they probably will even notice that anyone tried to claim this as an English film because it's got George Clooney and Sandra Bullock in it.
Right. It's not Chariots of Fire, British Invasion territory, exactly. If Gravity sweeps the awards, I think is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of interesting, though, because at the Emmy level, it's very American, right? I mean, I worked on a science fiction show in London, and there was no way we could get nominated in the Emmys because it wasn't partially funded out of the US, and it was a UK show. Fair enough, too. Like, it's just the Emmys are very American. But there isn't that feeling, I don't think, about... I guess you would argue that these are all funded by American studios, give or take. But, yeah, it's... The Oscars, I think... Whether they aspire to it, certainly have the air of being a kind of an international arbitrator of Western culture. Clearly, the Oscars don't extend to really judging, and in many real senses, a lot of sort of non-Western film cultures, or for that matter, non-English-speaking film cultures, other than, of course, through the Best Foreign Film category. Nevertheless, I still feel like there's a bit of a sense of, hey, this is worldwide.
I think it's like the way people look at the president of the United States as like a world leader of, leader of the free world and, whatever. It's like the Oscars are, the pinnacle of success worldwide for a lot of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, there's been a funny... I'm not going to say hypocrisy, although that could be the correct word, between what gets voted for at the Oscars for things like Best Picture versus what the industry really focuses on. So clearly VFX is the category that most closely represents what the industry is focused on, which is making a lot of money at the box office.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Best Picture, by contrast, often... particularly over the last 20 years, has attracted projects that are either independent in flavor, even though, rarely are they true independent films. I worked on one, Beasts of the Southern Wild, that really was, but most are not. And then there are films that are really quite international, even though they're not really foreign films. They're not straight up, American blockbuster movies like the VFX category tends to have.
Yeah. I mean, there is a big problem. Was it 5 years ago? Whoever was hosting the Oscars actually did a bit where they cut to a video of them at a multiplex discussing, hey, what do you think of this film? What do you think of that film? Oh, yeah. And everyone was like, never heard of it. I've not seen it. Was it Chris Rock?
It was Chris Rock.
Yeah, and that was, let's face it, kind of a bit of a slap in the face. Like, yeah, best film for every respect other than box office. But you're right. I think the only other category that gets close is animated feature. Clearly, animated features are not penalized for being box office successes and have traditionally, represented films that are very much similar to the VFX in terms of, like, they are... very technical, very heavily a collaborative team effort, and often involve years of sort of similar type stuff. I'm gonna exclude. Well, sorry, go on.
I was gonna say quickly along that line is, what I said about Pacific Rim doing 400 million worldwide. Iron Man 3 was a production budget was 200 million, which is about the same. Their domestic gross was 400 million.
Right.
Right. And worldwide was 1.2 billion with 806 million foreign. So, I'm not using that as a quality metric, but clearly box office was a much bigger deciding factor in that one, and may have played more of a deciding factor in their nomination for an Oscar.
Look, I touched on Best Animated Feature. Who do you think's looking hot in that category? It's probably, again, a fairly, it's a pretty closed race. I don't think it's open. We've got The Croods, Despicable Me, Ernest, Frozen, Wind Rises. Frozen's got to be taking it home, haven't they?
Think so.
Yeah, I mean...
They
probably will.
Just handicapping it, my gut would tell me yes.
I mean, it's Disney.
What did the Predictinator say?
Nothing. He's done it, but Frozen's a Disney film for a start, so that's always a good sign, because in this particular category, that was such a tremendous pedigree. But not only that, I understand Frozen is now one of, if not the highest grossing box office film that that Disney's had since, and that's including The Lion King. And I'm sure that there's a stage production of The Frozen coming up. I thought Frozen was a good film, and I thought it was really well animated. But I also think there wasn't any Pixar film in this category. Monsters University
Frozen is almost it anyway.
Yeah. If you were at Disney Animation, you'd be feeling like, hey, we did this outside Pixar.
Oh, absolutely. But meanwhile, you know, looking back over the last few years, this is the first Disney film to step up in the era where Pixar really has united with Disney, and the production processes have, you know, more in common than they used to.
Yep.
No, I didn't say that to detract from the work by Disney at all, but it had going for it a lot of what the Pixar process brings, I think. And maybe I'm saying that in a little bit of ignorance, so I should probably actually shut up. I didn't do my research on that.
Well, it has similar numbers to Iron Man 3. It was like $150 million budget, did $384 million domestic, about $600 foreign, so it's like $980 million worldwide.
Now we've
Lion
missed...
King didn't do that much, I guess, maybe with
inflation. It's a thing, isn't it? Though The Lion King has got to be one of the most successful Disney franchises when you consider the multiple sequels and stage productions and stuff. So would Sandra Bullock be penalized in the Best Actress category because half of her body was often, if not three quarters of it, was digital? Kate Blanchett is obviously a fairly strong front runner in terms of the popular press, and Judi Dench and Meryl Streep can never be discounted, as neither can Amy Adams. But will Sandra Bullock be kind of penalized because she's an actress she gave, I think, a spectacular performance.
What a fantastic question to contemplate, and how much that means for the VFX business. You know, because in past years we would have been talking about, well, was Gollum believable enough that he should be nominated? You know, whereas here, unquestionably, that film rode on her performance. There's no question about it. And I haven't seen all of the performances in this category, so I'm going to step back and assume that others of these projects also were very driven by their lead female. Nonetheless,
I think you could argue that Judi Dench was closest of that group in terms of holding the film, because she was the central character. There are really only two major. It's not just two characters, but there are two major characters. She's central to the story. I mean, Kate Blanchett is in slightly more of an ensemble. Terrific performance, don't get me wrong. No one comes close to just anchoring a film like Sandra Bullock did. And I think she did it very bravely. I think she was quite naked in her performance. She was quite open in like just being completely emotionally bare, and she didn't look terrific in every shot. She was not trying to look young and glamorous in any way, shape or form, and she wasn't competing on sort of false melodrama. I think Sandra Bullock, it was a sensational performance, but I don't think she'll win the Oscar for it, even though I think she should personally.
Well, I think that if you asked somebody, a quote-unquote layperson, that question, they wouldn't even realize that a majority of her is digital, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that specifically comes into the conversation, although it is, I agree with Mark, it's a really good question.
Well, the reason I think it's so fascinating is now, in this case, there's no threat to existing actors who, let's face it, are the majority of people voting, that their jobs are taken away by this type of filmmaking. In fact, it let Sandra Bullock, whose only other Oscar was for The Blind Side, which is a great movie, but it's the kind of movie you'd watch on an airplane. It let her carry this movie that really got people running back to the theater excited about seeing movies. So I would say from an actor point of view, there are none of the mixed feelings about getting involved with VFX in this case.
Huh. Because I would have thought that there would be some sort of sense of, well, hang on, there are a lot of shots that she's digital, or the character's face is not seen, so a digital double has taken over the performance. Now, you might argue that she's still got voiceover or a bunch of other stuff going on. And you shouldn't judge a film on how many minutes the actress is on screen as being kind of a, you know, she wasn't on screen. But yeah, she was.
Well, yeah, and her face is really what is in this movie, and that Hollywood's all about that, and as well they should be. I mean,
I think also Hollywood would traditionally reward an actor who suffered for their art. So if you're an actor who's lost, you know, 50 pounds and or put on 50 pounds and, you know, done the kind of thing that some of the method actors have done, that tends to be rewarded as like real dedication to the craft. Well, she had to have been tortured sitting in that.
Ideally, in my metric, the Oscar, you know, for let's call it a performance Oscar, be it cinematography or acting or what, visual effects or what have you, should be given away for transformative performances, right? Like, it's everyone's performance should be, you know, the metric for a good solid performance is so low these days that sometimes when people do like a passable job, like Jonah Hill in Moneyball, like there was I have nothing against the guy, but there was no reason for him to get nominated for an Oscar for that movie because he did a good job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't see him in Wolf of Wall Street, and apparently everyone says he does an insanely excellent job.
He is
and
very good.
Super transforms himself, and that is, you know, there's a transformative experience, and he got nominated for an Oscar, and good for him. So, but, you know, Sandra Bullock, that is a transformative role, right? Cate Blanchett, transformative role. She's becoming something else. She's, you know, embodying something, you know, McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club, like that kind of stuff.
McConaughey's got to be, and not that we're going to be covering all the categories, but yeah, McConaughey is just a remarkable performance. I got an interesting thing to throw at you. I actually feel that in any other year of traditional whatever, we'd have seen, and I'm going to see if you can guess, another Oscar nomination for Gravity in another category that they didn't get. Actually, you'll never guess it. I think it would have in a previous year got a Best Costume Design Oscar nomination in place of The Invisible Woman or something. Though this year, of course, the costumes were digital, so there was never a consideration, I don't think, that it was going to win for that. Yet I think the costume design, the detailing, the work that was done, you know, you could argue it's getting really close to what happened with cinematography in that it had to be a combined effort between the Framestore team and the actual costume designers.
That is a very interesting point, because I have not previously made the connection myself to between, you know, like a costume designer, traditional costume designer, and a digital, you know, wardrobe or what have you. But yeah, obviously someone's got to do it. And
I went to a terrific Pixar talk at SIDGRAPH, where the Pixar costume designers from whichever film it was, I think it was Up. Was discussing how they did the costume design, and it was tailoring. I mean, there was nothing about the experience that these guys discussed that wasn't tailoring. Furthermore, everyone that was standing up on the SIDGRAPH stage giving this technical presentation looked, smelt, sounded like a costume designer. They didn't look like a geek. They didn't look like a TD. They looked like somebody that understood everything about sewing and seams and weights and the way that costumes tell a story. And I think we'll have arrived at a really interesting place when we can see someone that's doing digital costume design and stuff that is only really digital costumes acknowledged in Best Costume Design. But that has to be coming. I mean, I just can't see how it can't in light of Gravity.
This is all really good news, and there could be a lot of momentum for Gravity at the overall ceremony. I would handicap it in favor. I would handicap in favor of Gravity against American Hustle personally, because for me, American Hustle didn't even raise the needle, and it's nominated for so many things. And I think this could be that one of those years where there's that film that gets nominated you know, a dozen times, not quite, and takes home like two or three.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. Do you think 12 Years a Slave will not also be, you know, strong?
Seems like a classic Oscar winner. I mean, it just seems like the classic choice for Best Picture.
I can't see Scorsese going that well with Wolf of Wall Street because it is just such a comedy, and comedies just don't go well. I mean, I hope it's a comedy because I just couldn't take it seriously. It was just appalling behavior, but not appalling filmmaking, just appalling behavior by Wall Street's scummiest. Okay, so we're just we're touching on a couple of these other areas around gravity and stuff. I mean, the sound mixing, sound editing, sound effects stuff. Jason, just because I've got you on the show, you're such a strong musical individual. What did you think about the sound mixing and the sort of, I mean, it seemed to me to be really good. What do you think? You're much more informed than I am.
In which?
In Gravity.
Oh, I think the absence of sound was a genius move, mainly because I'm not a physicist or astrophysicist, but in the beginning of the movie, you know, when they put up this quote, you're at least led to believe by the filmmakers about the way sound and, you know.
Well, we all know that from Alien, right?
Physics. Yeah, but, you know, it's never been stated as like a, here's, by the way, there's rules for the movie and we're going to tell them to you up front. You know right. what I mean? You always have to extrapolate them, you know. Apparently, you can hear you scream in space if you're inside the helmet with them when they're screaming.
Sure.
But but I love that, you know, you have these tense moments that you're used to, these bombastic Michael Bay, you know, audio celebrations of a sort, you know, just like whatever, which is totally fine when you're on Earth, but in space, I thought it was incredible because you're not used to it, and you see the debris come by, it hits the stuff. There's, you know, no fire, no explosions, just things hitting each other, and you're just hearing these really dull thuds, or maybe feeling them more in the subs in the theater or something. But I'm not entirely a fan of this word, but it was very visceral.
I mean, Stephen Price has to be given a lot of credit, therefore, for carrying the emotional audio content of the film, because the score replaced a lot of those sound effects. Yet, of course, it's also nominated in mixing and effects and editing, and I think rightly so. But yeah, I mean,
it will win for soundtrack.
I hope it does. I hope also that it. I mean, in these respects, I love them. Giving us an intelligent film with intelligent kind of stuff going on, and those choices that were made that, you know, you could have forgiven them for having sound effecty kind of noises. It wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world, just making the intelligent choices not to do it. And I've got to say also, just love that this film wasn't 3.5 hours. I love that, you know, they made a film that they thought was okay at the length that it was, and it, you know, wasn't something that just went on and on and on and on. It was like, I think, a classic kind of 90-minute film. It's in every respect a film I hope they make more of, and I hope they make more of them because they've got more visual effects in them. But I just felt like Gravity was a film that if we could make more of those, I'd happily go to the cinema and watch them.
This discussion connects us to what about Gravity really is worthy of giving it a landmark award, like saying for this year, this was the film, because that story is about things that the VFX had to support, just like the soundtrack did, you know. You've got disorientation, which was achieved in a really novel way. The sense of loneliness and isolation, which was achieved partly with incredibly long single shots. You know, you've got the threat of imminent death, right? And that brings the visceral quality where the sound actually went the opposite direction and got really loud. And then, you know, It's a story of human courage rather than sort of a, I don't know, more stylized type of story, maybe about a, you know, with a creature-centered, say.
I think also, you know, we have a lot of admiration for astronauts, full stop, and the teams that put them up there. Right. You know, if there was ever a group that I felt like was close to our type of people, it'd be NASA engineers and, you know, people working on getting those programs to work. So what I'm going to do now is ask if we could ban any more discussion on gravity, because it hasn't won as we're recording this. It's just we think it will. I want to discuss the other four films and leave gravity out of it completely. And what I want to do is say, in those films, what are some of the things that we really, really liked? I'm going to talk about isolated shots now, because I don't, you know, I'm not sort of trying to get into a discussion about, as I said, who would come second or for that matter, if somebody should beat Gravity. But just, I think there were some great gems. Now, I've already discussed one of them, which was the character animation of Smaug. I'll give you another, and then while I'm doing that, you guys have a chance to think. But I thought that in Iron Man 3, the attack on Tony Stark's house and the way that that was executed, the way it fell into the ocean, but the whole helicopter gunship thing, it was well set up in the film. It was incredibly well executed. It was really, really great destruction stuff. And it wasn't just a gratuitous, I didn't care, it's just going to keep on coming building after building after building. It really seemed to, you know, the building was iconic, so we cared about it. There was stuff at risk. And I could always kind of understand what was going on in the house inside the amount that I would expect to in such a sequence. I mean, occasionally, you know, there's deliberately kind of, you don't know what's going on because there's an explosion happening. But from a choreography of a destruction sequence, there are many things to enjoy in Iron Man 3, but I thought that was one of them. You guys got any other examples of other scenes in the other four, these other four films that you think were really sensational? I pick you, Matt. Mark, sorry, just arbitrarily.
Yeah. Yeah, in Iron Man 3, I would back you up on Scanline's work on that house, particularly the constraints they had. They weren't even allowed to do the same aerial setups that they did for the other films in that location, so they really had to get inventive and do the whole thing virtually. For me, though, that when I think back to that movie, what really stands out to me, and it was interesting to do this show and revisit films that I haven't necessarily thought of. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about Iron Man 3. And the suit assembly in that particular movie, which let's remember was already really cool in the earlier films, in the first film, right? There was this really cool suit assembly sequence where you could see how the whole thing comes together, right? But then they took it up like five notches in this one, and the interaction with Tony Stark, where he's getting knocked around, he seems genuinely surprised. It's as if it's the first time he's done it this way or something. I don't know. It had a real spontaneous quality to it. I just loved it. I loved that sequence. And I also felt like from a VFX point of view, it was really challenging to achieve at that level.
I do agree. Now, there was a couple of suit assemblies. You mean the original one where he had the parts flying at him?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So what about you, Jason? Anything that, you know, from the other films that stood out?
I think probably the other good one I liked from Star Trek was the crash into San Francisco, into the bay, and it just had a real good context. It felt really huge and big and real, as a good shot should.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff in there. Obviously, Star Trek is good. I mean, I'm going to give you one from Lone Ranger, and it's an odd one. Obviously, we could talk about the big effects. For me, there was quite a few great small shots in Lone Ranger, and one that got me that I just thought was a great shot. Maybe one guy did it. It's not, you know, earth-shattering, but it was terrific. When he first wakes up at the beginning of the film, and he's thought to be dead, and he's on top of that platform in the middle of, looks like, the Grand Canyon, and it's obviously had wire removal or it's been extended up in height and stuff. And I just thought it was a great shot, and it had a good impact in the film. And there was a lot of work like that wasn't as obvious as some of the other stuff, but it was seamless in the film, and I thought it really made the film a lot better. So, yeah.
I remember seeing that shot in the trailer and being like, whoa. Like, you could, even in the trailer, you could feel it. You get the, like, Mission Impossible leaning out the Burj window shot, you know.
Yeah. What about you, Mark?
I have to jump. Yeah, I got to jump back in because I thought we were going film by film for some reason. And I do need to acknowledge, same as with Iron Man 3, I can remember, you know, my Star Trek viewing from last summer and what stuck out to me and what stuck with me. despite that I haven't thought about the film a lot since then, the number one thing that comes to mind or came to mind when I thought about this show was the ship-to-ship sequence in the suits and how dynamic and exciting that was. I mean, that didn't really have to be anything at all. And the combination of the J.J. Abrams factor of how well he can do a sequence like that, but also how inventive they were, particularly about the ending bit where they kind of crash land right into the bay there and, you know, literally pulling guys along with cables to get all of that interaction being bounced along Indiana Jones style. I loved that. And I also thought that the, and I remember this from talking about the show with you earlier, the opening on the planet, and particularly Spock on the volcano, you know, which had to be there, but wow, I mean, in terms of just putting somebody in a world of fire and all that heat, it just looked fantastic.
Well, while you're drawing attention to Trek shots, can I flag the way they rigged the lights on kind of a pulley line system so they could simulate how the lights of the attack gunship would look when it was attacking the Star Trek headquarters. I thought it was great. Like, I mean, you know, it's the boardroom scene from Godfather Part 2 or 1 where they, you know, attack. But nevertheless, it looked really good. And having those lights actually move in a believable way rather than just a bunch of, you know, lights being woven, hand waved around by some grips or whatever, just added to stuff that made it sing and make it work. And I really like that scene. I think people stay away sometimes from Star Trek because it's Star Trek. But whatever this film would have been called, it would have been a good, fun film to see with good visual effects.
Yeah, it had kind of a Die Hard feel when he's getting shot up. I just wanted Pike to say, you know, shoot the glass.
Yes. Pike should have had a very good, funny one-liner as he threw the fire hydrant out the window and destroyed the ship. But yeah, no, I mean, these films are films that had some exquisite work. It's such a shame as well, because in years gone by, you could have, and I think you touched on this actually at the beginning of the show, didn't you, Mark, that you could have one of these films clearly be an Oscar contender outright, depending on the other sort of pool of films. And I think you made the comment about It versus Hugo, giving Hugo a run for its money in any particular given year. I mean, it's just a very, very strong year.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling to think what's happened over the last 3 years to really reduce the limitations around how this work gets done.
Yeah. I mean, just green screen work alone, you know, you used to sort of watch shots in films and say, okay, well, it's so obvious that's an effect shot. And occasionally we still get those shots that are an effect shot. But there's a bunch of shots where you go, well, I know this has to be a green screen shot in some way, shape or form, but oh my God, they've nailed it.
Yeah. And, you know, we've said the least about The Hobbit here. And I want to be really fair to everybody who worked hard on that show. I think a lot of the work we're not talking about on it, I peg the director with having chosen how to approach those shots and sequences. And I think the work was still outstanding, but I have the same problem with it that I remember having way back when I was starting on the show and we were doing I Am Legend, you know, where I loved the movie and hated the way the creatures were directed. So to me, still a tour de force, just not to my taste.
Yeah, though I just can't get past how great Smaug was, how good that just, how it didn't look comical, how it did look vicious and threatening and still arrogant and had conversations that you'd expect with an English teacher. It was, you know.
And I will make a prediction now that come this time next year, we'll be having the same conversation about Godzilla that we're having about Smaug, minus the talking character.
Now clarify that. You think that Godzilla will be,
I think the animation of Godzilla will be a like Pacific Rim Smaug level.
So you're saying in all the good ways we'll be talking about it.
Oh yeah, sorry. I meant I meant in all the like mind-bogglingly fantastic ways of how that's brought to life.
Yeah, yes. As we record, that full-length trailer just appeared this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw Gareth in LA when I was over there for the VES and the Oscars. That film will just be gangbusters.
Oh, yeah.
I'm stoked for him.
Right.
And you know what? And you can see this in the trailer. It is a film for the fans in the sense that the other one wasn't. The one in New York just was...
The one of which we shall never speak again.
Yes.
Its name shall not be mentioned. Yeah. No, I think this will just be eaten up at Comic-Con, but also I think it'll just be good for people that just like going to seeing films.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I remember going and seeing on TV, the original Godzilla films, and they used to be great fun, but scary, but interesting, and have lots of interesting themes, and it wasn't all just buildings being destroyed. Back then, right. Of course, the buildings didn't look very realistic when they were destroyed, you know. Because there was that sentiment, right, that Pac Rim would out Godzilla, leaving Godzilla kind of as the, you know how you always get those two films that come out kind of in a similar right. vein, and the second one just completely suffers from being over it on the first one? Not going to happen.
No, because the story of Pacific Rim was terrible. The animation was incredible, like top-notch, whatever, but the story was not good.
Well, we don't know yet whether we've got a great story here.
Of course.
I have a lot of faith in Gareth, but...
Yes, that is pure speculation on my part. But
hey, any other films that you think will be we're talking about a year from now?
Captain America. I'm so bad at this.
You know,
I mean,
Noah.
From where everything I'm hearing, Noah, 2015 sure. is the that 2015 is the year that VFX is just going to have a year like never before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but Noah's going to be. I think Noah's also be off the charts.
Yes. Okay, well, so let's just agree that for the next couple of years, we're probably not going to be hard up for topics for the VFX show.
Indeed not.
No.
So with that, I'm going to say thank you so much for joining us again, guys, for our annual, discussion around the Oscars. Mark, discussed this briefly before, but what have you been up to? Where can people sort of follow what you've been doing? And maybe explain a bit more fully about the CineFX thing?
Absolutely. I like Twitter. I like spelling my name for you there, which is Mark Christensen, Christian like the religion, and SN at the end because I have one too many letters for Twitter. And yeah, I already gave a little woohoo for CineFX actually being a thing. I want to acknowledge CineFX itself and how I actually used it to prepare for the show. It's full of our app. Has not only the great writing from that magazine, but also a really nice set of video breakdowns that you only get on the app. And regarding the classic collection, which I used to just be able to say, well, it's going to be so great when we can even talk about it. Now I can tell you that I'm hearing from filmmakers who are using it and it's changing the way their films get made. And that was always the vision. Like everything that we've said in the show and throughout the year and over the past few years about practical effects never going away and even more inventively getting reintegrated into the process and being a lot of what's fun about doing this is there in those pages. And so I'm hearing from people who actually are not just looking at these things like a collector would, but actually as filmmakers. And that is amazingly gratifying to me and I'm sure to the people at CineFX.
And what about you, Jason?
I'm on the Twitters as Jason Diamond, one word, or my website with my company, with my brother, thediamondbros.com. We've been putting our dragons through their paces, Blackmagic 4K camera. I've been like in a little tech hole for a little while. But we have some cool projects coming up. And NAB, which will be fun to see everybody except for you, Mike,
because I'm
and Mark,
nor me.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm an ex-NABer.
Yes.
Sorry about that. Just
taking my kids to Hawaii.
There's one other thing that may
I'm
or
going
may
to
not.
Hawaii.
There's one other thing that may or may not be interesting about the Oscars, whether or not there will be, and it looks like there will be another significant protest over. Issues to do with the VFX industry and recognition of it. The previous protest gathered quite a lot of attention, and certainly if you're interested in that, There's information that you can find out checking out. I'd suggest people go to VFX Soldier if they're interested in that. It's a complex issue. We've certainly been covering what's been happening at FX Guide, but it'll be interesting to see. I think if Gravity does win, especially if it wins in cinematography, whether history repeats itself, and if it does, whether that is an issue or not outside of our industry. But certainly we'll be watching closely.
And can I just jump in and say I'm optimistic this will not be a carbon copy of last year. I think that the protest is going to be better organized. VFX Soldier's out of, you know, hiding now, and as are many others. And I think the Academy knows they blew it last year, frankly. So I'm hopeful. And honestly, if VFX-driven films win the cinematography Oscar for the next 5 years, at some point people are going to wake up to what's really going on there.
Yeah, look, I can't tell you where, but I actually heard also that the Academy was kind of aware that they'd blown it a bit, and that it wasn't somebody just having a, I don't know, internal dispute that spilled over, because there was no internal dispute in that film, like hostility amongst the filmmakers and the VFX artists. And so hopefully, we, as you say, we won't see a repeat of that. But whatever we see, we'll be covering it here at the VFX show. We'll be watching it on the 2nd of March. Hope you guys enjoy your Oscar parties and go well in your pools. And we'll be really interested to see what happens. Thank you so much, guys, for spending time with us. I'm Mike Simmel. See you.
If you have any questions or comments, please email us at vfx@fxguide.com. Copyright 2012, FX Guide, LLC.